All right, Krishna, everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and it is Bhakti Wednesday today. So putting out an additional video on Wednesdays to talk a little Bhakti Yoga. And today we're going to talk about the universal form of the Lord. I get questions like this sometimes, and I've been meaning to do a series on this for a while, but the gist of the question goes like this. In the Bhakti Yoga tradition, is God ever referred to as the universe? Sometimes people will use that. Sometimes you hear people use that almost as a replacement for the word God. Some people are, you know, obviously allergic to the word God for a variety of different reasons, totally understandable. So what is this universal form of the Lord and how do we talk about it in Bhakti Yoga? I want to read you guys a story from the Srimad Bhagavatam about a sage named Markandeya and a vision that Markandeya had, both the universe and God as a personal being. So in Bhakti Yoga, a little preface before we dive into this, right about this time of year in the Krishna Bhakti tradition, we celebrate the childhood stories and the childhood form of God in a month called Kartik. And that's celebrating Lord Damodar, who's like a little, like sort of like the childhood stories and pastimes of Krishna. So we celebrate this for a month around this time. And one thing that you'll find sort of across the board in Bhakti Yoga literature and teachings is the idea that nothing beats intimacy between two beings, you know, whether it's your dog, you know, or your kids or your spouse or a best friend, or just, you know, someone that you're connecting with. You're at a big, huge event and you find someone to have a more meaningful personal connection with while you're at a big conference or something. We seek it out naturally. We seek out interpersonal relationships. And this is something that's emphasized in the Bhakti Yoga tradition. We completely accept the idea that there is a universal form of God. So saying God, using the word universe for God, is totally legit in Bhakti Yoga. There's a universal form of God, but also God is also a personal being that has innumerable forms, but that the universe is not like the ultimate form of God. In fact, if any form of God does not increase intimacy and in the interpersonal dimension of our lives, if God does not slowly become more of a being to us that we eventually can actually see and relate to. This is so a lot of the times, you know, people use the word universe almost as a way of dealing with the feeling that God is a force or a presence or the ground of being itself or something that a being that can't be understood or related to as I can relate to you or you can relate to me in the flesh. So while God has many forms, one of the important things in Bhakti Yoga that we emphasize is not to let God live in abstractions, but to bring, to make sure that we understand that God is a personal being. And so universal form, legitimate, but so are the personal forms. And you're going to hear a couple of stories this week and next. We're going to do two-part series on this, the universal form of God and how Bhakti yogis deal with that form and relate to it. So today, this is called Markandeya's vision, and it comes from the Bhagavat Purana volume 2 translation by Ramesh Menon. I just like this version because it's a little shorter and easier to read. So I'm just going to share this to you guys. Here's a story today about the universal form of God and someone, a yogi who has an encounter with it, as well as the personal form of God. The sutta continues, pleased by this hymn, the Lord who had came as Nara Narayana spoke to the scion of Bhrigu's clan, said Sri Bhagavan, Brahma Rishi, you have attained the highest spiritual goal through your dhyana, your bhakti towards me, and by your self-control and austerity. You have found samadhi with the Atman. We are pleased by your perfect brahmacharya. We bless you. Choose your boon and you shall have anything, for I am the foremost among the granters of boons. The Rishi Markandeya said, Deva Dvesha, Lord of gods, one without decay, what greater boon can there be than you appearing thus before me? Brahma and the other great ones see you with their mind's eye after long tapasya, but you have come to me so that I can see you with my eyes. So here's God come to this yogi in person. Like, it'd be like if God just walked into your room and you're like, wait, you can like walk, you're like a being that can like walk around and, you know, relate to me like a person to person. I mean, think about that for a second, right? That's mind blowing. And we underestimate how deeply mystical that idea is. It's, we're very quick to be like, oh, well, that's unrealistic. That's a human like anthropomorphism. That's some kind of, you know, projection of our wishes that God would appear just like we are. But no, God is a personal being. And so how do we experience that, the intimacy of that personal form? So anyway, here's the Lord appearing right before this yogi. One without decay, what greater boon can there be than you appearing thus before me? Exactly, there is no greater boon. Brahma and the other great ones have seen you with their mind's eye after long tapasya, that means like sacrifice, concentration, austerity. But you have come to me so that I can see you with my eyes. But Lord, I have one wish. I want to experience your yoga maya, by whose delusions the world's perceived duality in your single being. Sutta says, Muni Naranarayana granted Markandeya's unusual prayer and returned to Bhadarikashrama, where they dwell. They went smiling, for those that worship Narayana usually ask for freedom from Maya, but here was a sage who asked to experience Maya. Markandeya stayed on in his ashram, thinking about the Lord's promise that he would experience yoga Maya. He worshiped God in the fire, the sun, moon, water, air, and ethereal Aksha and the Atman, Akasha and the Atman. He meditated upon the Lord as the Antaryamin. He made offerings that he imagined to the Lord, but at times he was so overwhelmed by divine love that he forgot entirely to perform these rituals. Most learned Rishi of Bhrigu's line, one evening as Markandeya sat upon the banks of the river Pushpapadra, an unprecedented storm began to blow. The wind howled and the black clouds filled the sky and were rent by thunder and lightning. The rain came down in streams as thick as the boles of trees. The seas rose and flooded the earth until all land was covered by water. The rain continued and the ocean rose into the sky. Ferocious winds and immense streaks of lightning threatened Markandeya from without and fear from within. That Muni lost his composure and trembled to see the world submerged. He looked up and saw the deluge overwhelm the firmament too. All the dvipas were underwater. Bhumi, Patala, Swarga, and all the mandalas sank. So it'd be like planets. Markandeya drifted alone about upon these terrifying waters. He was like a man blind and drunk, his jata hanging loose. Tormented by hunger and thirst, terrified by the denizens of the sea and by the tides that still swept the ocean, he drifted, exhausted, and all around him was pitch blackness, and he could see nothing, not land, not the sky, not the quarters or directions. Whirlpools seized him, waves smashed him unconscious, sea creatures big and small bit him, vied to devour him, tides of grief swept over him, and delusion, searing pain, pleasure as well, dread diseases, the terror of death, all of these. Thus he floundered upon the waters of the Pralaya. Caught in Mahavishnu's Maya, Markandeya felt he ranged the sea of the deluge for thousands and thousands of cosmic years. So here's the universe, right? And the picture that we're getting of someone who wants to see this, who wants to see the sort of universal mystical power of God, the universe, the complete, total universal form, all of it, right? Well, he gets it and he's swept up in it. And this is after God comes in person and is like, hi, I'm here. He's like, that's cool that you're here. And this is like the most impossible thing to obtain ever. But yeah, could I see like your crazy universal form full of like everything, you know? So he gets it. And now he's like, he's getting completely swept up in it. And it's overwhelming and terrifying. And now whirlpools seized him, waves smashed him unconscious, sea creatures big and small bit him, vied to devour him, tides of grief swept over him in delusion, searing pain, pleasure as well, dread disease, the terror of death, all of it. Thus he floundered upon the waters of the Pralaya. Caught in Mahavishnu's Maya, Markandeya felt he ranged the sea of the deluge for thousands and thousands of cosmic years. See, this is the universal form of the Lord. Suddenly he spied a splendid papaw tree. It stood upon a promontory of its own, full of lush new leaves and fruit. Gazing, the Muni saw that upon a leaf that grew from a northeastern branch of that tree, there lay an infant whose luster dispelled the darkness of the pralaya. The child was dark green like an emerald. He was beautiful, his face like a lotus in bloom. His nose was perfect, brows high and arched. His chest was broad, his neck like a sanka, and his shining locks seemed to wave even like a sea as he breathed. He wore pomegranate flowers in his ears, formed like the inside of a seashell. His lips were red as corals and lit by a dazzling smile full of glory. The corners of his eyes were crimson like the inside of a lotus, and he glanced around him, smiling all the while. His belly was as flat as a papaw leaf, marked by three folds, a deep navel, and it throbbed with the pulsating life of his prana. His hand and fingers were exquisite. Such was the wondrous infant that the Rishi saw lying upon the papaw leaf. And the child sucked avidly upon the big toes of his feet, both of which he had in his mouth. Markandeya looked at the child, and his exhaustion and fear melted away. He trembled for rapture now. The lotuses that were the sage's eyes and the one that was his heart bloomed. Though wonderstruck, Markandeya went toward the infant to speak to him. But when he went near, the Rishi was sucked into the infant's body along with his breath as if he were some microbe. And when he was inside of the child, Markandeya was rooted. He saw the entire universe there exactly as it had been before the pralaya. The Muni saw the sky, the heavens, the earth, the galaxies, mountains, seas, islands, continents, the quarters, the devas and asuras, forests, village, rivers, cities, quarries, fields, cowsheds, the varnas and ashramas. Markandeya saw the yugas, kalpas, Kala himself, while he saw everything that the universe ever contains within the body of that magical and holy infant child. He saw the Himalaya and the river Pushpadara. He saw his own ashrama and all the rishis that lived in the Tapavana. Even as he watched all of this, the infant exhaled, and the Muni found himself expelled from its body and afloat again upon the waters of the deluge. Again, he saw the papaw tree on the outcrop of land and the child laying upon his leaf. The infant glanced sideways at the sage and smiled his divine and dazzling smile. This was the dark child upon whom Markandeya used to meditate in his heart. Now he saw that holy child with his eyes and once more went toward him to embrace him. The child, the Lord who bestows the fruit of all tapasya, the Antaryamin, vanished before the Muni's eyes, just like the hopes of a luckless man. At once the papaw tree and the ocean of the pralaya also disappeared, and Markandeya found himself back on the banks of the river in his ashrama, sitting in dhyana as before. The Sutta Ugrashravas tell the rishis of the Naima Shavana. Whoa. That story is amazing. A few takeaways. Here's someone who's such a good meditator. You know, he's focused on God so deeply with so much love in his heart that God actually appears before him as a being and is like, "Hi, I'm God. You want to hang out?" And he's like, yeah, that's great. But actually, could you give me a vision of your crazy universal form? I want to see your mystical powers. You know, like I want not you're here. That's cool. But like, can you show me some mystical stuff? Show me like this. I want to see this crazy universal form. Let's see that, you know? So he gets it. He gets it. And what does he see? He gets this vision of the end of the world. He gets a vision of universal destruction, which is part of the universe. And also within that torrent, he gets all the pleasure and the torture of all of it. And he's just floating and he's forgotten everything. His peace, his shelter, his sanity, his stability, he is gone. He is swept away in these universal waters, which are very turbulent and beautiful, blissful, but also very terrifying and turbulent, all of it. So, and he's just overwhelmed in it. He can't hold, there's nothing to hold on to. And as he's floating through this craziness, there upon a leaf, he sees God as this beautiful, sweet, mysterious little child just sitting on a leaf. And as he looks at God and he's starting to feel like, okay, there's shelter. There's something sane and stable. that I can understand and relate to. He gets sucked right into Krishna's little baby body. And inside that body, he sees all of it. He sees the universe as this peaceful, serene, beautiful place. He sees it as this total destructive place. And then he comes back out and he sees the little baby again. What's the realization there that he's having? Why are we getting this story? It's because he had already achieved the greatest thing he could achieve, which is not the mystical universal form of God in bhakti yoga. It's that personal, intimate connection. Let me just tell you, most people feel this way inherently. They just don't know it. For example, there was recently a rocket that was launched out into space with passengers on it by the Amazon guy. And William Shatner was on board. And I watched a snippet. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched a snippet of him getting out of the shuttle after it, you know, came back down to Earth and talking about what he saw. And whether you like the Amazon guy or not, just bear with me here. So he gets out of the shuttle and he's just overcome with emotion. And he says, I wish everyone could see this. I'm so overwhelmed. And William Shatner's actually crying. And what he described was the quickness with which they went through the blue layer of atmosphere and out into utter and sheer black. And then looking down upon the earth, he described the blue over the surface of the earth like a blanket, like a comforter. And he said he didn't realize how beautiful, how fragile, how safe, how wonderful that earth is, and how vulnerable it is. And, you know, intimate and precious life is, until he shot through the blue and out into the black. So a lot of the times when we talk about the universe, most people are actually talking about something that's very, very personal, that's very comforting, that's very nurturing, that's very sensitive. And in bhakti yoga, what we say is like, yeah, and that form of God is a personal form of God. It's not the universal form in bhakti yoga, though the universal form is a valid, beautiful, it's just one of the other forms of God. But a lot of the times, there's a way in which we are hurting from the misuses of the word God. You know, a lot of people maybe grow up Catholic or, you know, some faith tradition, and they get really injured by the word God, because God ends up being this kind of almighty figure. It's very judgmental, and there's kind of like prostrate yourself before this God and so forth, or there's abuses of power and institutions and things like that. But what we're talking about in bhakti yoga, when we use the word God, and in particular, when we use names like Krishna or Damodar, Govinda, Gopal, all the different names of God, personal names of God, is that this, for most of us, the universal form of God, if we really have a look at it, is going to be completely terrifying and overwhelming for us as little beings. We love to think that in some kind of mystical transcendental state, that we can just be one with the universe or something like that. But in the bhakti yoga tradition, we say that you can't be one with anything other than your own self, because you can't fully merge into anything, because God doesn't allow us to ever lose our individuality. And so because of that, we also want to look for the individual form of God that can come into a relationship with us. Because if we try to relate to huge ideas about God, whether it's the almighty God or it's the universe as God or whatever, there's something about the immensity of us that will really tear us apart if we go too deeply into it. And so so there's this really rich honoring of the universal form of God in the bhakti tradition. But then there's also stories like this that come in and are like, look, if God walks into your room and is, you know, kind of relating to you as a personal being, living in your heart, sharing life with you, even appearing in person in the case of this rishi, you know, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. That's it. That's what we're all looking for, is sweet, intimate. You know, there is something to be said about blasting out into space and seeing the vastness of it all. But as William Shatner said, the reason that he was so thankful for that vision was because of how much it made him appreciate the earth and the blue of the earth. And He just couldn't believe how blue and comforting and gentle and sweet the earth looked from the perspective of the blackness, which he described as death. He said, there's life, and then out into space, there's death. So similarly, this rishi gets blasted out into the universe, and it's filled with a lot of stuff, right? A lot of stuff. But at the end of the day, what does he gravitate towards? He gravitates toward a small, innocent, vulnerable child. And each one of us, in essence, have that same fragile need for sweet intimacy, gentle, tender intimacy. We have to be careful that we're not looking for the tumultuous, you know, epic, multidimensional, you know, oneness of mystical experience. Not that it's, you know, sometimes there's a season for it, but that most of how we measure our spiritual growth has to do with whether or not we're able to, you know, connect with other living beings, animals, children, friends, people, lovers, people that we work with in sweet, gentle ways. You have to remember that mystical experience can be sometimes like a temptation more than anything else. If the mystical isn't putting us in touch with that inherent vulnerability, most people, when they have, for example, ayahuasca experiences, which I did for about a decade of my life, after they get done with an ayahuasca experience, what do they want to do? They want to go home and they want to see their kids. They want to love the people that they love. They want to take better care of their bodies. They feel grateful that they're alive because they go through these mystical experiences that are very similar to that crazy ocean, that the universal ocean that sage gets to see. And at the end, what does he realize? He realizes the thing that he needed and wanted most was the form of God that appeared before him at the very beginning. Oh, God, you're here. Actually, rather than seeing this crazy universal form, maybe we could sit down on the couch and like have a sweet, peaceful exchange, sharing something that's relatively simple looking. Isn't it interesting that the Bhakti Yoga tradition, for me, it's fascinating that the Bhakti Yoga tradition emphasizes that small, everyday, basic exchange between beings of love rather than the grandiose, mystical, universal stuff. So at any rate, it's just something for us to meditate on. And it's also not to say that there isn't a very beautiful place for the universal form, because the universal form shows up in a lot of interesting passages. And it is one of the forms of God that is amazing. It's also a completely beautiful, amazing form of God. So hope you guys enjoyed this story today. Next week, we're going to take a look at the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna also asks to see Krishna's universal form and then has this crazy response. And we're going to actually read that chapter together. So that'll be next week. I hope you enjoyed this. Remember, Kartik month, if you want to print off like a little picture of baby Krishna, you can find on the internet somewhere, put it on a little altar somewhere, maybe put it in a little frame or something, and offer a candle every day, offer a little fruit or some water, something like that. It's a very auspicious month for celebrating the sweet, innocent, childlike nature of God. All right, I hope you guys are doing well, and we'll see you for Bhakti Wednesday next week. Hare Krishna, everyone.